You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
You know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop?
That's interesting.
What? Yes.
If you were Donna, what would you have said?
I said...
A waitress, rather, call the police. And she was mistaken for 90210 for cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
Look at that. Dean Cake and Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here.
Oh, at least there's one person on this Fricata set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him. I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here.
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your take, right?
So sit back and relax because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Okay, here we are back on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Larry Mullen, back with you. How has everything been in your world? What's going on, man?
Well, I had like a one-night vacay in downtown L.A. We stay at the Hoxton Hotel, which is kind of a hipster hotel, and with a pool on the top and a great Peruvian restaurant. And we went out to Atwater Village to a very, again, hip club called the Zebulon, because there was a band playing that we've been following for years called Gold Star, and we're giant fans of them. And we had a great night. You know, it was a late night. We stayed downtown because we just couldn't make it back to the West Side after that, and had a great time. But I'm pretty wiped. We hung in there. We had younger friends. They were pooped.
Right. Well, that's exciting. That's very exciting. But how's everything else with you, man? How's the area, you know, how's all going on? Everything good with you?
Everything's good, you know. I think, you know, we have a little cooler weather now in our beachfront. But, you know, it's been really a great, you know, weather year, and everything else is good. I mean, Chuck is in, you know, we wish Chuck the best. He's in London tonight watching Lindsay, developed the show Cruel Intentions, which is being produced there. And they all went there to have some fun and go to to just savor all those opening night things. Yes. And we wish Chuck and Lindsay and Karen the best.
I'm excited to say that we are covering Strike the Match this week.
Yes.
But next week, we're covering the episode that airs after this episode, which is The Big Hurt. And Spider One of Power Man 5000 is going to join us on this podcast. So that's really exciting.
You know, when we're ready to start, I've got a couple of, you know, just vital statistics I want to bring up so we frame the episode a little bit.
Yes, let's run an ad. I'm going to show a clip from Patreon of someone that you don't know. Josie Davis was with me this past week, and she talked about meeting Luke a couple of times. I'm going to run that, and then we'll come back, and we're going to dive into this episode.
And then I remember Luke used to say, he kept saying, "Your eyes, oh my God. You look like a husky dog." And he just kept saying, "Those eyes are like a husky dog." Yeah. And then we saw each other one time at a party and he kind of wanted to date, you know? And I was like, I don't know if I want to date an actor. And I was like, not sure, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, he'd want to talk about acting and I don't like talking about acting, to be honest. And he was the nicest guy, you know? And I remember going to the bathroom and my friend goes, "Oh my God, he's so hot. What are you going to do with him?" And because he was wanting to dance with me outside and stuff. Right. He's being really cute and romantic. And I said,
"Well, now you gotta go to Patreon to find out that." Larry, that's the idea here. I got to get people to go to Patreon.
Now, I mean, I want to see if it closes the deal.
Well, you got to go to pay. I'll tell you out afterwards, but Beverly Hills 90210 show and find out about how that played out with Josie Davis. All right, Larry. So there's a lot to talk about as we get into this episode, but before we get into it, let me show you the promo that aired to get people to watch this episode.
Donna volunteered to make a music video.
You're about to be the last woman on Earth.
Me?
She had no idea she'd be the star. And an old rivalry heats up.
Oh, they scratched the word Sky Val on the side of my car, and I can't think of anybody else who wants me dead besides you.
Maybe you're not thinking hard enough. You want to take it outside?
Glad to.
Catch a brand new 90210 next Wednesday.
I mean,
you know, it's good, yeah. You know. You know, we got Drew and Brian with us also, we should mention. Yes. Brian from Reddit and Drew from, you know,
our returning champion. Brian is now a member. He's a member of the team here at the
officially. Yeah.
I love that.
That was a good promo. I mean, that's the short version. I'm sure there was a longer version too. But because it doesn't have Taryn in it. I mean, this was a very promotable episode. Lots of stuff's going on.
I was
going
to say, you would think they'd promote the whole Tara thing.
Yeah, they didn't. But that's what I'm saying. I'm sure there was a longer version. This episode aired April 10th, 1996. And it got 13 million people watching it. Pretty good. It was directed by James Darren and written by Steve Wasserman. Again, they were not riding as a team this season. They had stopped, and this was a solo effort for Steve. And, you know,
I will ask you. I was going to ask you about that, but we'll figure out the best way to talk about that.
Also, James Darren, the director of it, you know, was in the 50s. You might remember Drew, or I know Brian remembers, but he played Moondoggy in the original Gidget with Sally Field. He was the love interest for Sally Field.
Wow, I'm actually kind of in shock right now. I didn't realize that was James Darren, the director of this.
The same director as James Darren. He had great hair. He had fantastic hair. That's what I remember about him most.
I wanted to say real quick.
Do you remember him, Drew, James Darren?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That was one of the benefits of working on this show, is like meeting all these people and going, oh, my God, this is incredible.
Well, you met Potsy too, because Anson Williams was a director on 90210 as well. So,
oh, yeah,
really? I want to let everyone know that's watching on Instagram, I cannot put your comments on the line on the page. So if you want to, you have to watch it on YouTube. But there are some really nice things being said. I just wanted to say that Simon said it's good to see you guys. He loves the watch along. He looks forward to them every week. And 90210 Cat says, it's always bothered me how Joe was so disapproving of Donna's outfit, but he started dating her when she wore the devil's Halloween costume. So that's it.
Well, you know, be careful what you wish for, whatever. I mean, you know.
Jessica says that she loves James Darren. So that's great to see. Okay, let's get into this, Larry. So it's not a highly, highly rated show.
Well, I mean, for this season, it was. I mean, because the ratings this season really swung high because we had One Wedding and a Funeral, which went, you know, 40% higher than we ever had. Like, you know, 25 million people watched that show. And the only other real high point was the episode we did a couple of weeks ago, Turn Back the Clock. For some reason, an early January episode got really a lot of ratings. And then it seemed to be we kind of settled into a 11 to 12 million groove. You know, again, this is the sixth year of the show. People are counter-program you. The other networks are. You become real, and they want to take you down. And we couldn't really replace Luke. I mean, so that was
that was the question I was going to ask you. Is the plummet Luke leaving the show?
Well, there's some of that. I mean, you know, it's again, ratings were a funny thing because I think I was saying before when we were off. Sometimes the ratings have to do with the show before you, this week's show, you know, or, you know, if people didn't like it or really got excited about it, the ratings will reflect that. You get the bump from the other show, or else you get the anchor. And sometimes other people come in with special events, you know, they're all of a sudden airing, you know, the Emmys or whatever, or something else is coming in there because it's sweeps week. Because we're moving up all these storylines that we're telling here, which are pretty good storylines, are all getting ready to climax during the May sweeps. This is an April 10th episode. And we didn't have another episode, which is odd, an original, till May 1st, The Big Hurt. And I think that suffered because we had so many episodes, people got hooked onto the thing, like you get hooked on a
series. I'm wondering what was going on Fox that you would be off for a few weeks.
I don't know, but I blame them.
Catherine West says that baseball used to preempt. Baseball used to preempt.
There you go.
Very true. And certain more, because again, Fox was an association of independent stations. It was not a network as such.
Right.
It was a net let.
So let's get into right off the bat here. Claire and Donna tell Kelly, she needs to go. Tara needs to leave the house. That she has stayed here too long. Larry, have you ever had someone stay with you like on this level?
Of course. And someone Tara, said, by the way, Tara, by the way, is named after a girl that I met hitchhiking across Canada, who we wound up bringing back to our house. So it is a similar story. But she was talking to her dead husband at night, so it was very disturbing. It was. And the only good thing was is that during my adventure, I was researching a play. This is like 1971. And, you know, my wife, Dee, and I, she was my wife, and we hitchhiked across the country so I could, you know, research the play. It was called Free Ride. And we got picked up by a welder in British Columbia, kind of a lonely kind of guy, very erudite, who showed us the maps of Atlantis in his basement. He had these enormous maps that only could be drawn by aliens, we thought. Anyway, I put him together with Tara, and they wound up getting married.
Oh, that's amazing.
I don't know what ever happened because I lost contact over the decades, but I always thought that was bizarre. So I always remembered Tara that way, and I was happy to kind of bring her into the fold again.
I love when we find out where someone is named. The actress is Paige Moss. We've had her on the show, and she's really, really great. Maggie says, this is the single white female and Tara began here. Want to say hello to Maggie. Much love to her. She went through a whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Illness and whatnot.
Sorry, Maggie.
Yeah, she's doing okay. She's on the mend, but much love to you, Maggie. So just wanted to let you know. All right, let's see this. I pulled a whole bunch of clips here.
Age was awesome this morning. The waves were huge. Oh, we better get school. Have a good day.
Larry, we should point out in the watch along, and I pulled this clip that of us talking about fashion, which we don't normally get into here, but now since it's a very popular thing on other shows to talk about fashion, we should talk about it as well. We both said we don't love Kelly's short hair here.
Yes, that's correct.
I gotta say, I'm not a fan either.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to put it in time. Was this a Princess Di thing? Was this the Princess Di years, maybe?
I don't know. Maybe. But let me ask you a question. When she showed up with hair this short, was everybody in total shock? Does she have to get approval to have a haircut?
I'm sure Jessica had knowledge of it because Jessica really wrangled that stuff. We really depended on Jessica so much, especially with the actresses. And Jenny and her had a relationship.
That's right.
So I'm sure Mr. Spelling also had to sign off on it because he was very particular about that.
It does work later on because
coming back from New York at the beginning of season 6 where she was a fashion model. And somehow in this fashion model thing, I believe that was part of her look. Is that correct? I mean,
well, I'll tell you this right now, that this outfit that she's wearing is not one of a fashion model. No. So I'm sorry. No. Yeah.
Hold on, check it out. So sorry. I found some great croissants at this cafe on the Strand. We're late for school. Sorry, we got to go. Yeah, we'll see you later, Cal.
This brings out the real mean girl, Kathleen.
Claire and Donna do not want anything to do with it.
You know, I love Paige, that. Paige, I'll try one. Paige is like someone who's slightly off.
They're still warm. They don't like me too much, do they? Tara, you can't please everyone. Still, I'm freeloading in their apartment. I told you can stay as long as you need to. I don't want to hear another word about it.
She looks pretty good, Kelly. You know, I mean, yeah,
she admits she's freeloading, so that's the start. And Kelly has such a soft spot for her.
Well, again, you know, Kelly's coming off this incredibly vulnerable situation where she basically, you know, crashed and burned on cocaine and went to rehab, and now she's just trying to be a better person and trying to be a better person with someone else who's been, you know, stricken like she was. So it's a good storyline. I mean, it's again the emotional reality of following this series through is what really helped us tell stories because we just tried to be slow. It was all slow play. I mean, how people really feel.
This episode sort of, we get into the, Catherine West says that, Maggie said that she's feeling better. Catherine West says, I love Claire's hair like this. And Larry and I both pointed out that fashion, that not only did we love the hair, but the leather pants as well. And Donna looked great as well. So
yeah, she looks great.
Let's talk about this, is that Donna and David are making a music video. That's why we have the title of the music of the episode is Strike the Match, because that's the name of the Power Man 5000 song. How did you get Power Man 5000? Were you aware of this band, Larry?
God, you know, Again,
this show is all honesty.
I was trying to build bridges with the stars. And did you know the band, Drew? You probably didn't know them before this.
Well, see, I was in my office playing the scene.
Drew, you knew that Jason had a record company out of Boston,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Called Curve of the Earth Records. So, you know, being, you know, the producer I am, I'm looking for a music act. I listened to the whole catalog of music he had. And the only one I thought I could use was Power Man 5000. I figured, you know, give Jason a little bit of bump, you know, because every artist who appears on our show gets a little bit of a, you know, a good sampling of, you know, 12, 13 million people. So that's how I found them. I went through Jason's Curve of the Earth Records catalog circa 1996 or five, and that was the best one.
Wow. I wonder. I'm excited for them to come on. Or where Spider is coming on. Do you know who that is, Larry? Do you know which one that is?
I don't. I'm excited. Ask me about it was the a long time ago. I would know the Cramps, but not that one.
Yeah, but I'm excited for him to come on because I want to get his take. He told me he has a bunch of really awesome stories for this.
Oh, that's great. They had lines too. I mean, I was watching the episode. Yeah,
they do have lines. I didn't pull that clip. I figured I'd pull that for next week, but the Donna and David thing. We got into an interesting conversation, and I don't know how you want to talk about this. But Donna and David are planning their music video, and I asked you in the watch along if this is sort of what the relationship was like with Steve and Jess. Were they sort of the kind of people that would be like, oh, this is the idea. Because Steve wrote this episode. Is that sort of where Steve is writing from? You had a different and interesting opinion.
No, I mean. Steve and Jessica as a writing team when they were really functioning and everything, doing great work. Jessica sat at the keyboard and Steve, you know, walked around the table and came up with really interesting ideas and moments. He was able to explore a deep emotion also. And they would go for it, but it was a rough room, I mean, with them. You know, Jessica's from New York and Steve's from Cleveland, and no, it'd be pretty fiery, really. So, no, it wasn't really Don and David. I don't think that was their relationship.
And at this time, they were going through some tough stuff, the two of them.
It was just ill-timed, unfortunately. You know, they'd just taken over the show, and they decided to split up as a producing and writing entity, which I know, was just hard. But people's hearts couldn't get in the way of the work. We just couldn't. And they basically, you know, it was hard because it was acrimonious too. So basically, Steve and I worked together because there wasn't Chip anymore in this season, and there wasn't Phil yet. So it was really just Steve and I, and
Meredith.
Meredith came in. She was a bright young writer, really helpful, you know, breaking stories and giving good perspective. Really clean mind, and I think that was really it. Maybe we had Eisendraft too. Yeah,
sure. Drew, do you have any great Steve Wasserman memories or stories?
No, but honestly, the single biggest memory I have today was learning about him passing away. I know that's a weird thing to say at that moment, but, you know.
Had you not known that story?
Me? Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I knew it back then. It's like, it was just one of those things, like, was at home on a weekend? And my buddy called and left a voicemail that said, "Hey, sorry about your dude," and that was all he said, because he had heard the news.
It's Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah,
he heard. You might as well tell what happened, Larry. I mean, it's on the internet.
Steve drowned on the way to Catalina in a sailboat. They come around the way a sail comes around, and he got knocked into the water. Didn't have a life jacket on, and the people on the boat, one of which was his ex-wife and Shira, unfortunately, and Jessica's brother. I just couldn't get him in time. It was very cold water. He died of hypothermia, I think.
Jessica has written about this. If you follow it, there's a blog about it that Jessica wrote about all of this.
It was a terrible situation.
So that was the call that you got? Someone said, "Sorry about your dude."
It was the voicemail. And so I heard the voicemail and I thought, so this is, I've never said this to anybody before, but you know, Jason was car racing.
Oh.
And I thought, oh shit. I thought, this is the one.
Like, through that.
You know, I mean, that was something that people.
Yeah, I mean, Steve had also wiped out a motorcycle in a bad accident, too.
People muttered about that, you know, like while he was doing that. that like, man, that's dangerous. Oh my God, I hope nothing happens to him. You know, it's like, and so hearing something like that, I ran to the television because I was like, oh no, you know, it's like, and there was nothing on TV, which made me go, it couldn't be Jason.
Right. That would have been breaking.
That's why I thought it can't be any one of the actors, because that would be huge news on TV right now.
Yes.
So I had no clue who it was for a little while until my buddy got home.
Did you have any interactions with Steve on the set?
My biggest interaction was kind of like the interaction that Larry and I used to have, because when they came over to the stage, the writer's office was behind my office. So you had to walk in the front door and walk by my office to get there. And so I talked to everybody that came in. You know, I mean, honestly, the number one
question. You'd be wearing a Grateful Dead t-shirt.
Yeah, my tie-dye. I mean, I was full on tie-dye at the time. I was every single day, no matter what, long hair, everything.
I had a sports jacket on and a tie.
It's really hard to imagine you in that uniform.
You know, wanted to look the producing part. You know, it was a different world then, you know.
Absolutely played the part. Yeah. The stereotypes were still there, so you had to play it.
This is a scene. We move this along here.
Sorry, Tara. This is Valerie and Colin.
You were at Steve's party, right?
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah. Nice to meet you guys.
Well, we'll see you around.
Okay.
Bye.
See ya.
Wow, that's a really nice car. God.
I hate her so much. I know I shouldn't feel this way about anybody, but I do hate her.
Because of Colin?
She has been after him since she asked him to paint that damn mural at the club.
Come on, Kelly, you're just paranoid. Besides, Colin's no good for you anyway.
I know.
I still hate her. Well, anyone you hate, I hate too. I hope she dies.
Tara, you don't even know them.
Doesn't matter. That's what friends are for.
She does understand so well.
What's that, Brian? What'd you say?
I was just saying Paige really does the unhinged character really well.
Yes,
it's so scary. I mean, and she's a delightful person. She runs an art gallery in Palm Springs in downtown LA. She's very, sophisticated.
If I went to her art gallery, I would hear that same music that just played at the. When something weird is going, I would hear that in my head all the time. Unfortunately,
who was composer on this episode? I don't think it was my brother. Yeah,
I don't think so. Yeah. But so we're setting up that Tara is now. We know that she's unhinged. She's a little bit awkward before this happens. Now you guys are exposing.
Again, we're showing what she is now, because this episode also, she goes to get her luggage, which is some guy's holding for her in a store. And she opens the luggage up and there's a gun in there. So it's just, fun's going to be happening, It's just really, again, we're leading up to some big episodes, and that was our job. You know, again, that was the manufacturing process. We had to be hot during those months of November, February, and May. Those were the money months.
For those that are watching along, I'm curious if you guys feel that Tara would be a really good friend. Anybody who gets your back on that level, like, I hope she dies, is probably a friend. I
mean, in that respect, yeah.
Right? Like, I want that person to
have a real ride or die, yeah.
literally.
Literally.
I like it.
Don't get in trouble.
Let's see. So then we set this up. I'm going to just, I put it all together, but... this is another thing that's going on.
Shawl is beautiful. Where did you get it?
Oh, it's family heirloom. It was my mom's. It's my lucky study shawl now. It's one of the only things I have from her.
Well, it's beautiful.
Claire, something's happened.
What are you talking about?
I did your laundry. Yeah.
Did you mix my whites in with my colors?
No, I know how to do the wash.
Oh, what then?
Claire, don't hate me for this. Just happened. But I accidentally washed your mom's shawl with the rest of the laundry.
Oh, no.
It's pretty bad.
Where is it? Let me see it.
I would not go get it. I would just say it's gone. It's gone. It's gone.
We had this happen,
No. So.
Nope.
How could you do this? You knew what this meant to me.
I mean, pulling that out of the laundry. Larry, you said you had this happen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure you did. Didn't you ever had this happen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Drew, have you had this happen?
Yeah.
No, I know how to do laundry.
I shrunk basically a sweater, basically.
So I would take it to the next level and get that shawl tattooed on me. So that
was the beginning of the end of that relationship. You know, as we start winding down. No, we're season six.
This is season six. Yeah, but this
ends up pretty well. Actually, Claire forgives him.
Which is right. Well, I wanted to point that out, that people give Claire a hard time Brian's place on Reddit about, she was snooty and all this, but she was really sweet in this moment and forgiving, and she allowed him to, make the mistake and error. And she even says to him, "I know you would never hurt me. I know that you love me." So,
absolutely. Because don't forget, we're getting ready to bring in Prince Carl. We've got to challenge their relationship, I think. This is what's happening next, I think.
I do think that that's happening next. I think he debuts in the next episode. Things unfold at the club.
Come on, there's a fight.
Wait.
Damon, stop it!
Oh man, let go of me! Get off of me! Let go of me! I'm sick as punk.
Break it.
I didn't start it, man. I didn't touch Valerie's car. You need to know what you're talking about before you accuse people of things.
I know exactly what I'm talking about, all right? Come on, Kelly put you up to this?
What?
Come on. All right.
Let's get off. Hold on.
Come on. As far as I'm concerned, the shoot is over.
Nat. David. I'm sorry. She's right, man. Chill.
Really quick, let's place our bets. Who do you think wins in the fight, Colin or David?
Wow, good question.
David would be he's pretty wiry and strong. I mean, if he took his shirt off, we'd be kind of impressed.
I think David would knock him on his ass.
I think was not as well physically as well built, I don't think. I think I put my money on David, I think.
I think so, too.
I think so, too. But there's also the caveat of, is Colin fueled on cocaine at the moment of the fight?
Oh, yeah, you might be able to, but Colin comes from a rough background, but he's an artist. He probably was bullied as a kid. He probably wasn't the bully.
How about the apple boxes getting thrown?
Drew, I love that.
Drew, were you offended when that happened? When the
apple... To my core.
No, I wanted to say, watching this thing, because obviously the fight doesn't happen.
Right.
It's Chip Johansson. I was talking to him the other day because I saw something. He wrote me he saw something from Nanatsuno. He kind of was laughing. And he said, oh, yeah, Nanatsuno, the show where things almost happen.
There's an almost fight. We almost had a fight.
He almost gets raped. He almost has a fight. Yeah. She does get raped.
Speaking of the almost fights, how about Kelly and Val? Who's winning that one?
Oh, Val is winning that. She
was that was terrible. Val was terrible.
She threw her own hand off to beat you.
The buffalo would come out.
She's already killed before.
Well, there you go.
She's tasted blood.
Larry, I wanted to ask you this. I thought of this question. This
Beverly Hills. Cage match would be good. Cage matches.
On that note, Larry, you have written some almost fights in WWE, right? Like everyone had to get broken up. Does the David and Colin almost break up with Nat diving into the middle of it like a referee? How would you rate that in WWE scale?
I'm liking James Darren's coverage here, though. I think the coverage just feels active, and the editing is – I don't know who edited the episode. We should probably just quickly check. I see if it's our friend Jerry Frizzell. But, no, I thought the intensity was kind of there in the thing. I thought that was pretty good, I mean, you just needed to have, like JR or somebody say something. Michael Cole.
Oh, my God. That's my next – that will be my
Taz,
next.
Taz, my buddy Taz.
Little thing. The editor is Scott Henderson.
Yeah, Scott Henderson, like the third editor. He was a junior editor. He was the young guy on the team. Good guy.
Rick Gunter was the cinematographer who did an incredible job.
He knows Rick, I'm sure, really well. He's passed on now, but he was terrific. Really easy to work with and a lovely man.
You asked about the composer earlier, Martin Davich.
Marty Davich. He was one of the main composers of the show. He's an excellent TV composer.
Well, I bring up Rick because we have some of the outtakes of, and I'm going to show again some of this next week, but we have some of the outtakes from Strike the Match, the video.
Oh, well, let's set it up because, you know, again, with the story in the storyline, you know, Donna's going with Joe. David talks her into helping him do a music video, you know, for this band. They come up with this idea together, which the creation of the idea is actually pretty natural. You know, the way they're throwing it around. I thought that worked out pretty well. She becomes the last woman on Earth. But it's not supposed to be her. It's supposed to be the drummer's girlfriend, who then at the last minute falls out and Donna has to step in, which is, you know, better. And that's where the surprise for Joe when he sees Donna dressed up like this.
Before we show that, I want to show this, actually.
Colin, somebody keyed my car.
What? Hell of a way to start the morning.
Who could have done this?
Don't worry, it's probably just vandalism. Some stupid kids or something.
This is not just vandalism. They know my name. I'm calling the police.
I should have played that earlier, but I love that Collins just writes it off as vandalism. But they wrote "die Val," you know.
He thought that was short for vandalism.
Exactly. let's see what people are saying. Catherine West says it lives rent free in my head that Val's car wasn't fixed and she flees the court with "die Val" on the side. Okay. Renee says so good and creepy. Let's see. Jessica said, I think I thought of this Steve and Clara arc the other day after Christmas. Family members spilled water on my computer. She's talking about the computer incident, which is where I fell in love with the Clara Arnold character. Right. Yeah. Mark Reed says, Drew Kinney looking hip as FK. Good podcast. Okay.
So my first roommate in college.
Well, there you go. What Maggie says, Kelly never took self-defense classes, so she loses. That's why so much crap happens to her. That's right. There's a great episode where that happened. Colin has to double-check to make sure Val's name was there. Renee says, poor Val. Okay, here are some outtakes.
They can't do this.
I'm just going to mute the music because I don't need the drama, you know, right? Even though Power Man 5000 will be here next week.
Wow, look at that hair, though. It's hilarious. That's fantastic. This is the age of time. You know, already MTV is probably waning down, but this was so typical of an MTV video, you know, of the time.
Dunn is giving me Gene Harlow vibes here.
Yeah, definitely. You
know, I mean, she's
blonde.
She's stunning. Donna Martin Tori Spelling is stunning here. And I love that she did all this. Let's see. There's some more here. What else do I have? I have this. Look at this. I don't know that we ever see the music video.
And it's entirely something
small.
Would have made a good special feature on the DVD is having the whole thing actually play out.
Yeah. I mean, we just didn't know enough to save dailies then. You know, it was just not something you did.
This is some great stuff. I mean, I love that you have this, Larry. I don't know what inspired you to save these, but...
Yeah, inspired me to save it. I just figured we'd be looking at it about 30 years later. Exactly.
Let's see.
A prophet, a poet, a pusher, you know it. Slow it down, we're going on
like the match.
Yeah, well, I can't play that, but that part of it, but... I can't hold a match that long, so my fingers are usually done.
He's
by this
really
point.
Good, man. What is that? Is that a doctored match, or what do you think, Drew?
Well, that's where I was going to get to. No.
Just a real match. I mean, she's pretty brave, yeah.
Did you have any memories, Drew, looking up at this episode, you know, of maybe setting up any of the Power Man 5000 stuff?
Well, I remember it was really kind of nebulous because we were trying to figure out. It was a little tiny space behind the college in the back corner of the stage. And so we knew we had a limited amount of space. We were going to shoot, you know, just a couple of angles. And we knew that, you know, one of the angles had to be shooting up at her and one of the angles had to be shooting down. So we got an old car and some miscellaneous crap and a painted drop in the corner with the sky and kind of winged it. Like, you know, like a low budget video would do, honestly.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if you saw this clip here, Larry, but she struggles to blow the candle out. Watch this. wedge this in. For those that are not, for just listening, Donna is trying to blow out a candle, a match. Yeah.
And she has a little laugh.
Yes. The other thing that's happening in this episode is Brandon is offered an opportunity of a lifetime. I don't understand how Brandon Walsh gets the greatest opportunities.
Again, we really build this. I want to just also highlight the fact that this ball of twine was something that Steve really loved.
No.
The idea of the ball of twine, if they were going to visit this ball of twine in the middle of the country. So that becomes the thread in the story in a certain way. But again, this is setting up a major move in this relationship where we're going to totally bone Brandon at the end. He gives up something major, and then she doesn't follow the same way. She takes the job. You took the job.
The thing for me is that, and I love the Susan Keats character. I'm a huge fan of Brandon and Susan Keats. I don't love her here. I mean, she's talking about a fucking road trip adventure. You know what I mean? While Brandon has
a ball of twine.
You know what I mean? Brandon has this incredible opportunity. Why can't she not just take a time out on this and say, you know what?
She's egocentric. She just is concerned with their relationship, and she doesn't. No, she shows her true colors here.
We'll drive.
Brandon does not see it. He's kind of challenged in a way by her, to not see it, and he doesn't see it. He makes a mistake, and he learns by it. He dumps Tracy.
Huge mistake. Look at this.
All I have to do is intern for one of the best newspapers in the country this summer, and when I graduate, they'll guarantee me a job with full benefits, if I want.
Oh. Well, you deserve it. You're very talented, Brandon.
That reaction annoyed
me. The guilt trip.
And the face and everything annoyed me right off the bat. Like, I don't even want to continue having this
conversation. It's a classic guilt trip, yeah.
Why are you talking to me like this? All right. I like the Endless Summer poster, by the way, in the background there.
Very California.
Yes.
Thank you, Drew.
Was that your idea, Drew, the Endless Summer poster? No.
Thank Jill Hinkle.
Jill Hinkle, probably.
I did a Patreon, Drew. I did a Patreon with Amy. She had some fun.
I saw a clip of that. That was great.
It's a really awesome interview. I know it's off the beaten path for fans, but she goes deep about that first season. You were all friends. You were all the same age, right, Drew?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, honestly, we weren't, much different from the actors.
That's right.
We were all right around the same age. So, I mean, as you got deeper into the crew, there were crew members in key positions who were older, like the DP, Dan McKinney, or Blake, doing sound, or somebody like that. And they kind of looked at all of us like we were just nuts, because they looked at them like, oh, crazy kids, man, all these stupid demands. And then they'd look at us and they're like, oh, great, they're the same.
But she has an incredible memory about where they got stuff, how things happened. And we talked a little bit about the Walsh house. And she was also talking a little bit about just how things shifted early on in the series of the show. They had a walk through the art department, the cast, and then inevitably they switched the positioning, and the art department was moved so that the cast had their own, where the dressing rooms were. And that was a shift, she was saying. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Basically, it was hard to work in the office sometimes. Like my office, where Tom Fichter and I sat, was at the end of the hallway right behind Jason's dressing room. So their dressing rooms were kind of in this little corner around the corner from the production office. So once you turned the corner and you went down the hallway and you got where you turned into where Jason's and Luke's dressing rooms were, it was loud and rowdy. And it was, it's where they went to blow off steam. My office was right next to it. So it didn't matter if you were on a phone call, like talking to somebody, like ordering something, somebody would come in and scream, fuck! And the other room would be
or a pig would be wandering around.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also my memory. They had also motorhomes too, it seems like, toward the end of the seasons. Did they also have motorhomes on the lodge?
It was really when we had an overflow of people.
Oh, okay.
And we really didn't have dressing room space.
Right.
Then it became a necessity to sort of bring and supplement it out back.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when you're looking at that one shot outside the Peach Pit after dark, and If you're looking, the doors in front of you and they turn to the right to go look at the cars, there's bushes at the very end. That was the chain link fence or the alley. And sometimes that those bushes would have to get closer because we'd have to block those that would be sitting right there.
Right.
So we left some stuff there that was there all the time that Billy Don, our greens guy, put in there, and he would just water it and take care of it. And then when we had those other trailers come in, then he would supplement it with something in front of it, and you never knew they were there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, we had a greensman, you know, as part of the crew.
Billy Don Jackson.
But anyway, for fans that are on the Patreon, listen to that one or watch that one because it's really, really good. We're going to do one too, Drew, like that. A fun, you know. All right, here's more of Susan Keats. Sorry. I was so irritated by how she handled Brandon, and we had it to have a sidebar.
What?
I'm not finished.
I don't think there's anything more to say right now.
God.
All right. Then, let me show you something.
There it is.
What?
This.
Oh, boy.
What is it?
It's incredible, isn't it?
I thought it was weed, but...
what is it?
It's a tiny ball of knotted string.
A knot? You want to show me a knot?
Oh, no. This isn't just a knot. This is the smallest ball of twine in the world. And now that we've seen the smallest one, don't you think we owe it to ourselves to see the biggest?
You mean it? Or summer together?
If you still want to.
You mean you'd give up this incredible offer for me?
Well, the truth is, I already did. Besides, if I wait until next year, they'll have to pay me more.
Again, he's figured it out. He's not going to leave school all of a sudden. He's still going to get his degree. So, yeah, I mean, it takes the heat off her a little bit. But, yeah, he ruined her summer. You know, that's all she can see. What's she going to do now?
I wanted to say, Larry, I think you guys wrote Susan Keats really beautifully. I mean, and I think Emma, like, I love how she, like, responds to you know, like, how she just takes and does the dialogue that you guys wrote. Like, she just really, there's something very special about Emma. She's not Andrea Zuckerman. Do you know what I'm trying to say? She's Andrea vibes for sure, but she's fun and she's, you know, she's can play with him in a better way, and he wants to impress her. There's something much deeper happening there with those two. Go ahead, Brian.
Sorry, yeah, I always say this, and you know, it may sound a little harsh, but I always say Susan is who Andrea wanted to be, or you know, should have been, or you know,
she's more ambitious, she's more driven than Andrea.
Andrea would have
been sure. Brandon was looking for a quality woman. You know, again, he wanted to be married to Kelly like a year ago. I mean, so he's really getting serious about finding a woman, a mate. And Susan is going to be a formidable power couple. I mean, together they'll be a real, you know, amazing couple. So yes. I think he doesn't want to give her up lightly if this means that much to her. So, I mean, I can see it all playing out. And plus, you know, I like his rationalization. Yeah, next year they'll pay me more and I get to finish school. So, I mean, it's not, of course, after I left, he goes on to the Beverly Beat or something, you know, like North Valley, you know, neighborhood news. I don't know. I mean, it's whatever. It's so
Melissa sick. Says she would have liked to have seen Susan for season 7, too. That was never an option, Larry?
No, it wasn't. It might have been contractual. Maybe Emma was doing other stuff. Did she go on to Buffy, I think? Or
she did.
Right.
Yeah. I don't remember, but I think, no, again... You know, we knew we were going to go back to Kelly and Brandon. So, I mean, so, you know, that's what we were going to do. I mean, it just was going to happen that way. They were the royal couple, and we were going to play that out. Because, I mean, in a lot of ways, we were thinking at that point that graduation might be the end of the show. I mean, that might be the end of the run. That would have been 7 years, and that's a long time for a show. And it would probably over at that point, you know, almost 250 episodes, maybe. I don't know. I mean... I think With This Ring was like the 200th episode or 215 episodes, maybe.
Drew, was that something that you guys were always thinking about as crew? Like the show might wrap up? Was it? I mean, I've talked to some of the cast and I know that they never knew, you know. And it's not normal to have a show that's going to probably be there every year, right? That's a special job when you get that, even for you, Larry.
In the springtime, you know, after Christmas, that run to the end of the year, it was always, how are we doing? So you started watching, you know, just people on the crew, we started talking more about the ratings.
Yeah, because the schedule is announced in May.
Yeah, exactly. So that would be about the beginning of the anticipation. And then we'd hear that there was an announcement. And so for a while, the announcement was, is it 1 year or 2 years? Because they did that to us too, which, you know, in certain ways, that was a godsend to say, yeah, you got picked up for 2 years.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, because, you know, with somebody, you know, with the people that we worked with, you really felt like it was yours to lose.
Mm-hmm.
When you're working on a lot of situations where key players change, they generally take entire crews with them.
Mm-hmm.
So like with different production designers, you would think there'd be a different art director and set designers and set decorators and all that stuff. But, you know, Paul Wagner was the one who was like, no, I want consistency. I need my people. You can change to these other people, but these are the people that make this happen all the time that know what's going on. And so like those two things coupled together, you know, made it a relaxed place to be, honestly. I mean, you know, I mean, I haven't worked in the business in so long, and I hear people talk about it now, and it sounds just horrendous in a lot of ways. And it sounds like there's certain things that just destroy all the fun out of it, because it is one of the funnest things in the world you'll ever do.
Right.
You can't imagine waking up every morning and have somebody go, okay, and today I need a Taj Mahal in blue and yellow paisley.
Right.
Okay, sure. Why not?
Yeah. Larry, what about for you with that question? I have the Tara scene ready to go. So this is just, I'm just, you know, getting
what
ready.
Question, what question, Peter?
I mean, in terms of, you know, preparation.
Oh, yeah, it was going to go well. No, I mean, yeah. I mean, we kind of felt once we started college, it was a good chance we're going to get to finish college. So that was pretty certain. But
Chuck,
you know,
leaves. Chuck leaves.
There was a lot of anxiety that last year because the cast didn't know, again, it was kind of like, they don't know who's coming back, whether the show's going to come back, what shape the show's going to come in. And again, Jessica and Steve had split up. So that was, they were kind of fractured. That leadership was fractured. I was there. Chip left the show. So it was basically me. I brought
Chuck left. Bill.
Chuck was gone after season five. So he was already.
But so this is your first season without Chuck.
No, this season was. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this was the season that the Wasmans were supposed to run the show. And then they just couldn't.
Right, and all felt kind of fell apart. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, they did. They did things separately, but they as the, you know, the dynamic team, that was no longer.
Drew, is that something that you felt like, or you can feel the effects of? Like, I mean, and Larry was in the room with them, so that's different. Well, was that?
Yeah, because you know, it's in the early days of them. Like when we, because every episode we did a read through with everybody in a big conference room, all the keys.
Yep.
And all the keys and all the basically keys and the best boys in every one of the departments. And they would sit next to each other and sit there and have conversations in the middle of it, talking about what the script was about, to clarify for themselves and for others, like little points that we were trying to kind of narrow down. And over time, they started to sit in different places, and they would show up at different times. Like Steve would come later and he would sit in the seat that was around the corner. And then there was a time when they were never there together.
Right.
And then I never saw Steve at the office again. I saw him one time on Santa Monica Boulevard. Santa Monica Boulevard in Santa Monica. I hadn't seen him in probably 6 or 7 months.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they did separate things. I mean, Jessica, you know, still would work with the actors and casting and stuff. And Steve always did post-production.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a look at how this all comes together. Now, in this episode also, Kelly recommends that Tara goes to her hairdresser, right?
Yeah.
That Valerie and I will ever be seeing eye to eye on anything.
Hey, guys, I'm home. Is this pizzazz or what? So, how do you like the new me?
How could you do this?
Do what?
You know exactly what you did, Tara.
You sent me to
Donna's reaction.
I just told him to make me look as good as she.
I don't even want to talk about this.
What did I do?
Donna, what did I do? Maybe we just need a little time to get used to the new you.
And somehow Tara's the most offended.
I know. Frantic little, what did I
we
do?
We told
Donna?
You
what
she
I
was
do?
Weird.
Yeah, she's used to being a victim.
She wants to be you, Cal.
I mean,
I gotta say, the hair looks terrible on both of them. Good God. Yeah.
It's like Ric Flair. It looks like Ric Flair, the old WWF wrestler. So it looks more like Ric Flair on Tara than it does on Kelly, in fairness. But it's, you know,
She's even crazier than you think because she allowed that hairdo.
Right? Yes. writing that, Larry, the hair.
Yeah, I mean, we were full on, you know, single white female at that point. We were going right at it, you know, and that's, you know, obviously it's just, just showing where we're going with this thing. You know, this is the episode we really kind of laid our cards out. Cause we missed the scene before where she opens the luggage up and sees the gun.
Right. Anyway, it's crazy. I mean, this is some of the best stuff that I think we did in season 6, right? I mean, I think that seeing, Tara and become a stalker, and then what we'll cover in The Big Hurt next week, you know, it really is,
you know, again, with 32 episodes, you're looking for content. We just kind of rode this one. We thought, you know, the emotional reality of Kelly just coming off that, you know, that crash and burn, she'd be totally vulnerable to someone like this. So we just put her in the life and just kind of played it out. And let it go all the way to the end, which, of course, is going to end up in May sweeps, and try to do our best to draw eyeballs to the show.
Are you surprised by the rating that this got?
Yeah. I don't understand it, but I'd have to see the whole picture of what we were up against. But again, after Luke left, there was definitely, you know, like a 15% drop in the ratings. Mm. And, you know, looking at it now, probably needed to, like, have some other stunt casting, needed some, you know, someone producing wise to kind of bolster the thing, because we just didn't have enough star power at that part to, you know, to kind of pull, keep the thing. But again, it's the seventh year of a show. Shows always, you know, there's an attrition happens. I mean, you know, so, I mean, it wasn't that precipitous. And then again, you know, season 7 kind of stabilized and becomes pretty decent ratings anyway. I mean,
still 13 million people watch this episode. That's probably way more than what watches a single episode of television today. Well, so
2 million, Pete. I mean, 2 million is a rating now. You know, if you get 3 or 4 million at a special event, I mean, it's totally different. When I wrote Chips, we had 40 million people watch it.
Wow. Brian, any questions from Reddit?
Yeah, there's a couple fun ones. Here's a fun one. This is from user Frozen Kahuna. I'm paraphrasing these, so. What is another culturally relevant band at the time that you would see Donna doing a music video for?
That's it. Wow. See, I love Reddit.
Well, that's a good thing. You know,
I love all of you on Reddit. I love you all.
I'm going to say this band. Actually, I think I did use their music. I like the Austin bands at the time. And I don't know, Drew, if you like those bands like Ministry and the Butthole Surfers.
Oh, yeah. Great band.
I just got to let my dog out 1 second to eat.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I love Ministry.
Those would be pretty good. You know, Jesus Built My Hot Rod is one of the all-time craziest songs.
Wait, hold up. Drew just said a band, too. Go ahead.
Porno for Pyros.
Totally.
I love Porno for Pyros.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, those are really good answers. Yeah. Go ahead, Brian. Anything else?
Oh, here's one from Mary Pickaford. This one's for Larry. She noticed that in this episode, you kind of see both Brandon and Susan, as well as Joe and Donna. You know, there's like the little, you start to see drifting, you know, with the job situation with Donna and Joe, the whole music video, kind of not being, you know, supportive of it. Was this intentional? Were you guys starting to plant the seeds of an eventual breakup with these two couples?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that was, again, you want to have these conflicts reveal character. And, you know, Joe is a Christian. These values are important to him. And the fact that she's, they're exploiting her body, and it rubs him the wrong way. He can't help it. It's how he was brought up. It's just, and I think Cameron does a great job. I mean, it's a thankless job. It's not a great part to play, the straight guy in it with everybody else having their fun. But he does it with a good humor, and he's a good looking kid, and he would have been a good mate for Donna. But she has this kind of closet wild side, we all know, which is
which we're seeing in this episode. I mean, listen, she doesn't say, "Oh my God, no, I don't want to be the last woman on earth in this music video. Get someone else." Donna wants to get on the car and she wants to dance. Like, she looks good and she wants to, show off what she has and what she's doing. She's the virgin, sure, but she's sexy and totally should be available, and she does a lot of that to impress Joe. Like,
but she's a trooper also. They need someone to fill in, and just in her spirit, I got to help out. I mean, she's a trooper.
She needs to do the video.
I think that's what it was. Yeah.
And she herself was a trooper. I always felt, she really, she was a hard worker. She was always there for the show. The show came first.
But then Joe, I have the clip I won't show, but Joe does come into the scene and sees Donna on the car and all the stuff. And he is not having it.
No.
In a very nice way, but he's not happy. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to remember, he had no idea that she was, going to be the star of the video. He just knew she was going to be working on the video.
And it's hard enough that she's working with David. Again, we're working the triangle again. You got David, Donna, and him and Joe. So we just keep always working the triangles.
Eric Parsons makes me laugh every week. Ray would have flipped out.
Oh, God. He would have kicked more of those apple boxes around.
He would have thrown some pumpkins if there were.
Ray would not have been happy. That's very true.
Especially because she's a virgin. So, there's a kind of hypocrisy thing to it, which Ray would have picked up on. Joe hasn't picked up on that.
No, yeah, absolutely. Let's see. Okay, I don't know what that means. In true 90210 fashion, they made us start hating a beloved character before they wrote them off. What is that in reference to?
Talking about Susan Keith, probably. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's some truth to that.
Okay. I see where you're going with that. Okay. I don't hate Susan here.
No.
I think Susan is standing by her principles, and, she's maybe a little bit self-involved, but I don't hate her here for wanting to spend the summer with Brandon. It's a very normal thing for
By the end of the season, we do hate her, because she...
I don't hate her at the end either. I don't hate
honestly.
Her.
I mean,
yeah, I don't hate her for making a choice that helped herself.
She was redeemable. I would have brought her back if I had stayed.
Oh, I totally know. In season 8, she's coming back to work at whatever newspaper.
She wouldn't be wasted.
Why are you
working on a Beverly beat? What kind of job is this?
Well, I don't believe that she would have ever worked at the beat. I believe in your world, he's working at the LA Times. You know what I mean? He's working
better than that. He'd be working for some congressman here. He'd be in politics, I think.
And who does he run into? Week 1, Susan Keats.
Yeah, exactly. No, that would be fun. That would have been fun.
Brandon's going to work for the Argonaut.
Brian, any other questions?
Not necessarily. I mean, Trash TV Lover asked something, about the whole single white female thing, which you kind of already answered already. You guys were kind of pulling from that.
Again, when you do this as a shorthand, as a writer, you go Romeo and Juliet, you go a single white female, there's some little kind of tropes, I guess they're called tropes, which you try to customize them, but basically they're tried and true.
That question did lead to a funny conversation, though, on the thread, saying that Kelly wasn't really that great of a psych student if she couldn't pick up on Tara's craziness.
I know. I mean, in hindsight, everyone looks at their life like that, of course. Yes. Why am I? Yeah, we should have probably brought attention to that.
I also love how awkward you make Tara. Like, when she's around a group of people and doesn't fit in and says totally the wrong thing. And we've all been around people like that in our lives where you're like, oh God, how the fuck am I in this room at this moment with this person? And he just said that to her. You know what I mean? And she doesn't pick up on on any of it. Kelly is totally sold that this is a good friend.
That's a testament to Paige, really. I mean, she sells that so well. It's so genuine. So, like you said, it just feels like you're in the room. It's so authentic.
The awkwardness.
Yeah, you know, she had like one small little credit before this. But, you know, the minute I saw her, I went, oh, my gosh, she has that kind of little bit like, forgive me, but like something, you know, like mentally kind of like she'd be like marginalized somehow, like not Down syndrome.
I knew it.
Something's cool. Maybe alcohol fetal syndrome of the mother or something like that. You know, something's a little bit off. And I just thought she had that. And then she just kind of, you know, blew us all away with her reading. She's, you know, she was good. She was all in.
Well, so you saw her in the audition and said, this girl is
she had no credits. You know, she had to make her way through. We had other people auditioning for her too. It's going to be a significant part with probably like 6 or 7 episodes, right?
Yeah.
That's going to make someone's year.
Totally. And I mean, so memorable too. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I would put her in the iconic guest star category.
Well, again, you know, we have Tara, we have Laura Kingman. You know, there's a couple.
I was going to say, yeah,
balanced people here.
Finley, Alan Toya's Finley, who I love following on Facebook.
Our villains, Lucinda.
Yes. Well, Lucinda is definitely the most attractive of the villains. So,
and honestly, the least threatening. I mean,
yeah, she'll kill you with love.
Just Candace 1976 says that she loves that Larry has no filter, and so do we all. Brian, any other questions on Reddit? I love these Reddit questions.
Yeah. No, one thing that it tickled me was, you know, I never noticed this before watching this episode, was the guy that plays the Boston Globe rep, Stephen Culp. I didn't realize that was him. That's the guy from Kat, if she's watching, she's a big Desperate Housewives fan. He was on Desperate Housewives.
Oh, wow.
As I didn't know Marshall Cross's husband.
Also, Tara's only friend, apparently, in L.A., the guy that works at the shop that's holding her luggage, he was in Home Alone, I believe. I don't know where or how, but I do, according to his credits, he was in Home Alone. So, okay, this is this week. Now, next week's going to be really exciting because it's the Big Hurt. It's concluding what happens with Tara. It's the music video and a lot of really interesting things happening. And Power Man 5000 will be here to talk about their experience in making that episode and doing the video.
Hey, Pete, before we go on this episode, I don't think this episode can be aired on Paramount or the... unless I'm wrong, maybe it's on Pluto, but I think it's one of the banned episodes. Which
of course it has to be, because there's so much Power Man 5000 music in it.
I know. So, yeah, we don't get to see this. Any. It's hard to see. But, yeah, I tried to see The Big Hurt before. It was pretty good. I haven't seen it in years, so send it to me.
Yes, I will, for sure. Or we'll watch it along on the watch along. Yeah.
Okay.
All the things that we have is the Beverly Hills 90210 Show Shop.com. We have the Patreon. Patreon.com/Beverly Hills 90210 Show. It really helps out the show, so go support us. Okay, guys, this is great. Good seeing you all. We will see everybody next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.